Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This podcast is a Royfield Brown production. Find others on iTunes.
All right. Yeah, I know.
Hey, it's John here. The podcast hasn't technically started yet. It'll be along in a minute, I promise. But before we get going, I just wanted to basically ask you all for a favour. You're all very nice people. You've all been listening to us enthusiastically, I hope. So now I want something in return. I'm not going to ask for money, don't worry. What I would like, though, is if you had 5 minutes to give us a nice review on iTunes and to tell your friends, because we'd like to get more people listening to this and we think you're the best people to help us do that. So go on, be nice, do us a favour. Anyway, that's the public service announcement over. I now return you to your normal podcast service.
This is a Manhattan-bound B Express train. The next stop is Grand Street.
Mind the gap.
Welcome to Skylines, the City Metric podcast. I'm Barbara.
And I'm John. And this week we're talking about the end of the world. Are there really alligators in the New York sewer system? Is London really littered with bottles of discarded Uber piss? What's the world's smallest skyscraper? So, back in June, a national disaster befell the United Kingdom. I personally have been in a state of depression, frankly, ever since. I'm not quite sure how a way of life is ever going to recover from this. Nothing is ever going to be the same. Barbara, you're leaving us.
I am. Barbexit. Barbexit is a reality.
I thought we'd decided on Barbrexit. It sounds...
Barbexit. It's not great, whatever you try and do with it.
I mean, this episode is called Barbrexit. I warn you of that now. So like, okay, I've already decided fine. On this. That's...
Yep, I've even messed up my own leaving name. So great start for me.
Great work, Barbara. Well done. Nice finish.
Yeah, stumbling out as I stumbled in. But yes, I am leaving the New Statesman and City Metric in about a week and a half's time, frighteningly. To go to the I, where sadly there is no City Metric podcast, so this will be my last episode.
But don't worry, the podcast is going to continue. I'll tell you a little bit about how I'm going to do that one later. But yeah, in all seriousness, you are going to be a great loss to us. You've been with City Metric since the beginning. You were, I think it's fair to say, a major part of the reason for our success. And also the reason why the site doesn't just look like a map of the inside of my head. So I am going to miss you, and I'm sure the listeners are too. And to wave goodbye, I thought what would be nice is, in this episode, we're going to do a couple of your greatest hits. We're going to ask a couple of questions that I've probably fired over to you in an email over the last couple of years. We're going to talk about the stories they led to.
Question one.
Are there really alligators in the New York sewer system?
The answer to this question, very surprisingly, is yes. I remember John and I talking about this very, very early on, before City Metric even existed, and we thought, that's something people will want to know the answer to, probably because it's complete rubbish. But as my resultant article shows, there is in fact loads of evidence that there are alligators in the New York sewers.
How many alligators are we talking here? Is there like a whole... Is there an entire species down there?
So basically, there are a few. Probably because mad posh people have put them down their toilets when they've realised that they did not in fact want a souvenir alligator from their travels to Florida. So there have been a couple of high-profile sightings, one of which appeared in the New York Times in, I think, 1935. And had probably the most extreme headline I've ever read. I don't know if you want to do a dramatic reading.
Okay. I'm not going to try the sort of old-timey New York accent because I won't pull it off, but I will. Nonetheless, I'm going to give you a dramatic reading here. Alligator found in uptown sewer. Youth shoveling snow into manhole. See the animal churning in icy water. Snare it and drag it out. Reptile slain by rescuers when it gets vicious. Whence came it is mystery.
Yeah, and that's just the headline of the story. So it was quite a...
They had longer headlines in those days. Yeah, that's, I think that's like four decks. So.
It was obviously a very exciting moment for New York City. The other highlight of doing this piece, actually, was that I came across a New York historian called Michael Missione. Sorry if I mispronounced that, Michael. Who founded something called Alligators in the Sewers Day, dedicated to the fact that this is a very real phenomenon, and at which he gives out small toys of alligators. So do go next year if you're around.
Yeah, and there's a couple of lines from that piece I particularly enjoyed, one of which is... At this year's event, there were speakers and a quiz, and the first 100 guests received a free plastic baby alligator.
But even more excitingly, Michael glancingly referenced the fact that New York sewers are actually swarming with snapping turtles, which no one seems to really care about at all. And then when I said that this was slightly weird, he just said they're not nearly as exotic or dangerous as alligators, and they're native to this area, so what's the big deal? No one cares about snapping turtles, which really shut down my thought there.
I mean, I feel that's a bit harsh on the snapping turtles. I mean, the stories of alligators in the sewers do seem to be... They go back a bit. I mean, this seems to be an early 20th century thing. So it's possible there aren't any that are still snapping their way around there now. But the other thing I found really interesting in this piece was that there was also... In 1984, an alligator was spotted under the Pont-Neuf Bridge in Paris... Which, I mean, that raises questions for me. It's like, I mean, at least with the New York story, you have a plausible narrative of how exactly the alligators got there. But what the hell is this Nile alligator doing in Paris in the 80s?
Yeah, because, I mean, if geography isn't your specialism, Egypt and France are not massively close together. So it would be quite a journey for an alligator to make its way across all the way to Paris.
It was christened Eleanore and still resides in an aquarium in the city of Vannes. So,
which frankly sounds like a kind of Ratatouille-esque Pixar film waiting to happen. Right. So if there are any producers out there looking for an inspiring animal-based tale, I think that's your next candidate.
Also, I think you wrote this story in 2014, so, like, you know, alligators live for 30 years. I didn't know that. So, you know, a lot of things you learn. I say I didn't know that. I edited this, but I didn't recall that. So yeah, I think animals are one of those things that we talk about a surprising amount on City Metric, not just because people like cute animal pics, but you got any other funny animal stories that you want to talk about before you go?
I once did a fairly kind of upsetting piece about exotic animals kind of going wild in cities, which started as a kind of hilarious joke in the office because I think we saw a video of a llama running through a city. But actually, it turns out that whales often beach themselves quite tragically on beaches. There was once a zoo in the US, a private zoo owned by a rich guy, who then managed to release all of these animals, which were then kind of brutally shot on the fields outside a small town. So, yeah, animals don't always have the happiest endings when they try and live in cities.
No, I remember actually a whale swam up the Thames in 2005, 2006. Yeah, it was January 2006 because I just left a job and my now wife and I went out with a bottle of Carver to sit by the Thames, celebrate the fact I'd escaped a job I didn't like very much, and whale watch. And that was quite a sweet story, except like overnight the whale died horribly. So
yeah, and they usually actually explode because the bacteria in their stomachs kind of multiplies. Anyway.
Okay, a happier animal story before we move on is... Did you know there is a species of mosquito called the London Underground mosquito that lives entirely in the tunnels in the London Underground and is no longer capable of breeding with any other mosquito, which is what makes it a separate species?
I did not know that. Like, a great story.
Human infrastructure is affecting the evolution of animals. There's also there's a team of researchers doing mapping the bacteria that live on the world's subway systems. So there you go.
Question 2.
Is London really littered with bottles of discarded Uber piss?
So amazingly, the answer to this question is also probably yes. This was actually inspired by a tweet our great colleague Caroline sent me that she saw online, where someone basically said, my taxi driver told me that he pees into a bottle and then throws it onto the road. And subsequent digging I did basically showed that this is true, for much less funny and happy reasons, which basically are that Uber drivers don't have access to any kind of facilities that Uber provides. And also in a city like London, where there are vanishingly small numbers of public toilets, they really don't have many other options.
Yeah, the thing I thought was interesting about this story was that it does seem to be, you can kind of see how the system pushes people towards this. A couple of years ago, Uber introduced a guaranteed hourly rate for drivers, but to get that rate, they had to hit certain targets. They had to accept 90% of ride requests. They had to be online for 50 out of every 60 minutes. They had to complete at least one ride an hour. All of this apparently was designed to stop them from, you know, basically moonlighting and working for other app-based cab companies at the same time. But it does mean that you probably can't afford to take 10 minutes out of your hour to buy some food and therefore use the toilet in McDonald's or whatever without losing money. So you're kind of forced to stay in your car and find other solutions.
Yeah, and I mean, if you think about it, there's, you're paying for parking most likely. You're then paying for the coffee in the Starbucks or, yeah, the sausage roll in wherever else. So once you add it up, you've kind of lost an entire hour's worth of earnings, which, why would you do that if you didn't have to? So this then led to some quite kind of disturbing investigations of Uber to Uber driver forums where people chat about their kind of methods for doing this. So people were giving each other advice on what kind of bottles would work / fit. I don't want to get too explicit here, but apparently vitamin water bottles, if anyone is looking for a useful receptacle.
Is there an element of bragging that goes on and goes, well, personally, I can't use a bottle with a neck that small.
Thought about that, but actually that might have been partly what this was. Yeah. But I think the other thing about it is it does really highlight the differences between cities. So I think there were drivers in, say, smaller towns, or especially in America, who were like, why don't you just go to the 24-hour Walmart? Which, if you live somewhere like London, you're like, obviously, you know there's nowhere to go to the toilet when you really need it. So I think that it does kind of highlight the fact that they should work a bit harder to have public toilets here, basically.
Although the pub down the road from City Metric Towers is part of a scheme of the City of London where it keeps its bathrooms open to the general public rather than expecting people to buy a drink before they can use them. Which is quite handy, because a risk of unglamorizing ourselves, there aren't quite enough toilets in this building for the number of people who work here. So sometimes I do find it easier just to kind of leave the building and go to the pub.
Yeah. Well, a very unglamorous but suitable next step for City Metric would be to have a citywide map of places where you can, in fact, go to the loo. Useful for Uber drivers and office workers like us alike.
This is. I think I've mentioned my grandmother's stories before, actually, but this is another thing my grandmother used to say about 5-year-old John, which suggests I was always destined to do this job, was that as a 5-year-old, I knew where every public toilet in Romford was, just in case.
Oh, wow, so. Well.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Do the same for London and you've got yourself a business. Yeah.
So, I mean, before we move on, we've written a lot about Uber. You've particularly written a lot about Uber. Where are we coming down on this one? Is it a terrible thing that's wrecking good honest cab industries, or is it actually just offering a better service at a price people want?
So I really kind of swing on this one. My initial instinct is people never like new things. They never like new things that challenge old things. So I think a lot of the kind of anger around this comes from that. And I do think that actually if you're offering a cheaper cab to people, there's nothing inherently wrong with that. I'm not sure I totally sympathise with the cab drivers union on their problems with Uber. But I think
there's a lot of vested interests going on there, isn't it?
Exactly. So interestingly, I suppose from my city metric point of view, I kind of think, let them, if you're going to cab, why not? But then when I moved over to start doing more techie stuff, actually looking at the ways these sharing industry companies work, I started to be like, no, this is not good. I think the big problem with it is that drivers say things like, oh, it's the only flexible way for me to work. It's better because I don't have to do certain hours, blah, blah, blah. But they are exchanging that for worse pay. And I think what's rubbish is that no one's saying, look, we need both. We need flexible hours and proper workers' rights. That those things can't exist at the same time.
It does seem to fit into this narrative where, you know, rich, privileged Silicon Valley types think that anything that disrupts capitalism is inherently a good thing. And a lot of the time that does just mean slashing workers' rights and regulations that we've built up over many decades, some of which are there for a reason. Like, there is a very good reason why we expect people to be able to afford, you know, sick pay or holidays or maternity leave or whatever. And if we're moving to a world in which the sharing economy like Uber is going to be the norm, then we need to find ways of keeping those things, I think.
Yeah, it's a real sort of devil's bargain where they're arriving and they're offering far greater sort of convenience, far more flexibility. And they're saying, oh, well, the exchange you make for these things are workers' rights, are these kind of left-wing ideas. But actually, I think that's complete rubbish. They're just doing that because it increases their bottom line. So I think that people need to stop buying into that quite so much.
Yeah, and you know, I don't have a problem with companies trying to increase their bottom line. That's literally their job. They're answerable to their shareholders and so on. But there is a reason we should expect government to step in sometimes and say, you know, this far and no further. Yeah. Regulations are there for a reason.
And that there's been this outcry about zero-hour contracts. I mean, this is the pushing zero-hour contracts to an even greater endpoint in which you don't even have a contract. So I think it's odd, I think, that the left hasn't jumped on this as much as you'd imagine they would. I think they think that anything tech is progressive, anything kind of app-based is progressive. But actually, I think a lot of this stuff is quite regressive for workers themselves.
Do you think that might be because a lot of noisy people on the British left live in places where it's quite useful to get an Uber sometimes?
Yes.
Because my original problem with Uber wasn't based on anything around the ethics of the company. It was because it kept failing to deliver me cabs when I wanted them.
Yeah, it makes it a lot easier to be morally outraged, doesn't it?
But now I don't want to brag, but I've now got a 5-star rating, so I think it's a fine company.
We're very pro.
Yeah, very pro.
Question 3.
What's the world's smallest skyscraper?
The answer to that question, we don't actually know, because the piece that I've written under that headline isn't really about the world's smallest skyscraper. I mean, there aren't great definitions for what a skyscraper is, but it's normally about 100 metres or more.
It's about, I thought 30 stories is generally where we...
Yeah, there are varying definitions, but the building
that,
where...
it's just a high-rise.
So. Yeah, exactly. The building we're talking about is 12 metres tall, which is about 4 stories. So really, it shouldn't even be included in the debate, but it's a completely crazy story. So we wrote about it anyway.
So this goes back to the discovery of oil in Texas in around 1912. The owner of an oil company, J.D. McMahon, was living in a place called Wichita Falls, which even now is not a huge city. I looked it up to 150,000, which is, that's the size of Oxford. This is not a big place. But, you know, he had an oil company. And what do you want to do if you've got an oil company? You probably want to build a skyscraper and put your name on it. So he came up with a plan to build a skyscraper on a vacant lot in the town. And the plan showed it would be 400 feet tall, which is, you know, that's about 146 metres. That's not bad, considering the city of Wichita Falls is only about 40 years old at that point. You know, that's a reasonably good height.
So he took those blueprints to investors who gave him about $200,000, which may not sound like a lot, but I calculated at the time that would be around $2.7 million. So really, he's doing pretty well. So he started building the building. Everything was going great. And then eventually, the investors realized that something had gone wrong. Because on these blueprints, I don't know if you're used to the metric system, you might not know this, but an inch is usually represented by a pair of speech marks, and a feet, a foot, is represented by one. So basically, on his blueprints, he had put two next to every single figure. So this was actually a 480-inch tall building, which they had invested all this money in. So they tried to bring a lawsuit against him, but the judge basically said, look, guys, this was on the plans. You can't really complain now.
I've known this story for like a year and a half and still saying it out loud. It's just so wonderfully ridiculous this actually happened.
Yeah, so this is a 12-foot-long building, 9 feet wide and 40 feet tall.
It gets better, actually, because there was no room for a lift. But on the plans, because they were expecting a lift, they hadn't put in any stairs. So originally they built it in such a way you couldn't even get from one floor to another without leaving the building and going up the fire escape.
Yeah, and so for a very long time, basically McMahon then fled, presumably with the rest of his money, having carried out perhaps the greatest scam in the history of America. But then the block was kind of just still there. And I think it kind of symbolizes kind of awful optimism of that boom oil era, which then kind of didn't come to fruition, just as this very tiny skyscraper didn't either. So it kind of was occupied by a string of different shops, cafes, barbershops, and then it kind of fell quite derelict and was just an embarrassment. But it has a happy ending now. It's kind of a tourist attraction. It's been slightly done up again. There's a plaque there, and you can go and see the world's smallest skyscraper.
So if you're ever in the Wichita Falls area, then why not check it out? So do you think skyscrapers actually matter to a city? Do you need them in a modern city? Because, I mean, obviously, they look like they're quite an efficient use of space, but it feels like a lot of the cities that are really sort of building the, you know, getting in the big name architects to build them, they're doing it to, they're basically waving their willies around, right?
Yeah, I think they are. But I mean, as this story kind of demonstrates, having a signature building, even if it's an incredibly ridiculous one, can actually be kind of an asset if you recognise that that's all that it is. I think that, I mean, when I think of cities, I think it is nice to have something to kind of cling on to, which is a weird, I mean, Shanghai is a weird skyscraper shaped like a bottle opener. We have the Gherkin, we have the Shard. I mean, obviously these buildings were not built to look like sensible adult endeavours. But I think that it can be nice just to give, I mean, there's a reason we talk about skylines, we use skylines. There's something kind of symbolic about that kind of silhouette of a city.
Do you have a favourite skyscraper?
It might well be the bottle opener in Shanghai. There's another one there actually called the Jin Mao skyscraper, which is kind of almost art deco and it's really very beautiful. But then again, that's not what skyscrapers are for. So I'm going to go for the bottle opener instead.
I really like the big arch, the Grand Arch at La Défense in Paris, which is pretty hideous, to be honest. But what I like about it is the way it's arranged in such a way that it's like it would focus, you get a beam of light that can go through that and then through the Arc de Triomphe and then would land at the Louvre. And it's just, you know, that level of planning.
Yeah, very Da Vinci Code.
Yeah.
All of that.
This is a Brooklyn-bound A express train. The next stop is Dyckman Street.
So, I'm sure you're wondering, what's going to happen to this podcast now? Is it just going to be me talking into a microphone saying, you know, I like buses.
Everyone's greatest dream.
Yeah, I was like, if that's what you want, then you can find my details online and I'm sure we can come to some private arrangement. but no, we're very lucky that, having said that it would be irreplaceable, I have found someone to replace you, I'm afraid.
Not a classic.
Yeah. Our colleague Stephanie Boland from the New Statesman has very kindly agreed to step in and take over on sort of co-hosting duties from the next episode. Stephanie's got some fantastic ideas for stuff we're going to do on future episodes, including an actual rock star is going to come in and talk to us about what it's like playing in different cities. And, you know, seriously, someone from a band you will have heard of, I promise. So I'm quite excited about that because I'm a 90s kid. So, because it's nice to have a handover in these things, why don't we hear from Stephanie now?
Hi, John.
Hello. So, you like cities. We're all about cities here. What do you like about cities?
I do like cities. I'm from a city. I live in this great city. I think our interest is slightly different in that I like all the maps and the wonkish, nerdy stuff that you do, if that's not an offensive way of describing your being.
No, nerd pride.
Nerd pride. But I think my interest in cities is always going to do with culture and the people in them, more than the infrastructure side of things. So I, outside of my New Statesman life, I'm doing a PhD on 20th century literature, and I do a lot of work on Europe and on writing and art and how people interact with city space. So hopefully between us we can cover kind of a range of territory, you might say.
I can do maps and transport, and you can do maps and psychogeography, and between us we can do the whole.
Yeah, I'll do kind of feelings and, you know, buskers and...
Cool, it's going to be
cool.
Awesome.
Hi, City Metric listeners.
Oh yeah, go follow her on Twitter, that's the other thing you should do.
Yep, I am Stephanie Boland, that's B-O-L-A-N-D, not like the Forest of Boland, for those of you who like maps and have heard of that place. Yeah, follow me, come chat to me about cities.
And obviously you can't actually see what I look like, but it may comfort you to know that we do look slightly alike and have both got brown hair. So you could almost pretend that nothing has changed.
I don't think you look anything like each other. I mean, you both have brown hair and are reasonably tall.
Well, unnamed colleagues in our office have mixed us up on multiple occasions, so I'll just leave it at that.
I think also, like, on the emojis for Slack that Stephanie made for everyone, most of the women look kind of the same.
True.
So yeah, no, it's a bright future, but you know, obviously, you know, it's very dark without you. We're going to miss you terribly.
Goodbye for now.
So, before you go, though, one last question: what's your favourite map?
My favourite map. I'm probably sick of maps now to the end of time. But no, my favourite map.
The bitterness with which you said that.
I can let it all out now.
I'm going to say it's a joke, but it's not really a joke. I hate maps. I hate maps.
No, they have their uses, certainly. No, my favourite map is probably one I think we've talked about on the podcast before, which is called the True Size Map, because it exposes the tyranny of maps and how they actually show everything is the wrong size, and you can realise things such as that Texas is the size of Europe, basically. So I really enjoy playing on that, and so should you. You should all go and try it, and remember me when you do.
Thank you, Barbara. You've been listening to Skylines, the City Metric podcast. It was presented by John Elledge and Barbara Speed and produced by Royfield Brown. Our theme music is Dust from the Stars by Charlie Charles. You also heard The Weather by Destinazione Altrove and Embryonic Waves, composed by Matthew Weitzel. All music in the show was licensed under Creative Commons. You can find Skylines every 2 weeks on Acast and on iTunes, where you'll also find two more shows by our excellent colleagues, Seriously and the New Statesman podcast. In the meantime, you can find all the stories about cities, maps and geography you could possibly want on our website, citymetric.com. You can also talk to us on Twitter and on Facebook, where there's a pretty good chance we'll talk back. And if you wanted to leave a review to tell your friends how lovely we are, well, we'd very much appreciate that. Thanks for listening.
Is that the end? I don't know.
I thought that was a nice note to end on. I thought I could
I was meant to respond.
No. Also, like, one of the recurrent themes of this podcast has been, like, you laughing awkwardly at my jokes in the background.
So in some ways it's quite, you know. Keep all of this in. Yeah. Very meta. Well, yeah, see how it sounds, and then do whichever.
All right, yeah, got it off anyway.
This is a Manhattan-bound B Express train. The next stop is Grand Street.
Mind the gap.
지하 서울역입니다. 내리실 문은 오른쪽입니다.